end it after the shove it, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
Hello, welcome to the Dolphin UK podcast. Back from holiday, lads. Had a great time. Went abroad, first time in 18 months. 18 months, yeah. It was very nice. Did watch the Dolphins game last week. Sat on my iPhone in my room with a McDonald's, so that was very holiday-like. So there you go. Anyway, another week, another defeat. We'll get into that in a minute. Si, how you doing? Nice cap. Enjoying the cap this evening?
Yeah, all good, thanks, Andy. And if I'm following on from last week's pod, if I'm still Jacoby Brissett, all I can say is welcome back to Andy.
There we go. We'll get into that in a minute. But yeah, maybe you could be permanent if that is the analogy we're using. Lee, how are you, sir?
Yeah, not doing too bad. Hoping Simon's gonna take us to overtime.
Could well be. Right, lads. It's a bit of a sad state of affairs, isn't it, really? I mean, we pushed the Raiders to overtime, lost on a field goal. Peyton Barber ran 111 yards on us. takeaways, please. Somebody take the mic from me to start. Si, I'll flip it your way. Give me your first takeaway from this game.
I think if you're going to flip it my way, just make sure I'm not standing in the end zone while you do it, Andy, because that's just a really questionable call. but talking of questionable calls, we normally do takeaways after each game, and all of my takeaways this week are littered with questionable calls. That was the main thing that I took from this game in general. I mean, I've picked out three in particular that I wanted to highlight. The safety that I've just made reference to earlier. I don't know if you guys have seen the details of the media availability today, but effectively, I think Studsfield came out and admitted that that was the call that was sent in to Brissett. Now, he did also add that there were five eligible receivers on that play, and I think it was not only was it a questionable call, because why are you wasting a receiver simply standing in the end zone? But also you have to question the decision-making of the quarterback on that play. If you've got five eligible receivers, why is he throwing it to the only one that's standing in the end zone? So that was one questionable decision that I wanted to throw out there. The second one was a second quarter. It was 14-5. There was a 4th-and-9 at the Vegas 39, and they decided to punt rather than elect to take a 57-yard field goal in the dome. Now, I know that I think Sanders' personal best is 56. But when you look at Justin Tucker, getting a 66-yarder also in a dome, are you telling me Justin Tucker's 9 yards better than Jason Sanders? Yeah, you could make an argument he's better, but is he 9 yards better? So I was a bit disappointed that they elected to punt on that one, because obviously 3 points would have made the world of difference at the end. And then the third one, again, coming out of the media availability today, they admitted they wanted to start Malcolm Brown because they saw an opportunity to give him more of the ball, but he only had 7 touches of the ball. So if that is wanting to give somebody more of the ball, then I don't know what is. And he only gained 31 yards, 24 of which was on that touchdown run. So I mentioned about my takeaways were littered with questionable calls, and all of those three are ones that particularly stood out for me. Take it away, yeah. Lads.
Man, if you took away the 24-yard rush that he had, then that's 6 yards on 6 carries. So that's slightly painful, isn't it? I mean, for me, this game kind of was just like abysmal after the first 5 minutes and before the last 5 minutes. It was just lack of urgency. I completely agree with you on the play calling. It was back to the days of screenplays and all that sort of thing. It was just no ambition to force the ball downfield. I thought the first time we forced the ball downfield twice in the last couple of minutes, one slightly out of reach of Fuller, I believe. Second one, Matt Collins got the PI in the ankle when you're this in the end zone. Sorry, and you just like things happen when you go downfield a bit more. I felt that Brissett came under pressure a lot, obviously, so there had to be some short calls. But the O-line wasn't as bad as we've seen it, and Brissett was stepping up in the pocket quite nicely at times. I thought he kind of, his stature allows him to be a bit more physical in there as well. He'd have a few, you know, like, occasionally he had people traipsing off his legs and he shook them off and stepped up and you know, he was quite aware in there as well. So I think you could have given a few more aggressive calls. We saw what happened when you got Gesicki involved finally. I don't know when he had his first catch, but he ended with 10, 86 yards. It didn't look like he was going to get the ball at all for three quarters, I believe. But yeah, all round, just a bit baffling, really, and not the kind of thing that we want to see. After question whether the two play callers is working, but go on, Si, I'll flip it back to you, mate. Sorry.
Yeah, the general consensus of opinion was that people seemed to think that they had a good first 5 minutes of the game and a good last 5 minutes of the game. But if you got to put it into some perspective, because in that first 5 minutes, they were gifted an interception by the Raiders quarterback and also a turnover on downs when the Raiders went for it fourth and short in their own territory. So they were effectively gifted 14 points by the Raiders. Under normal circumstances, you wouldn't expect that. So to say they had a good 14 minutes, yeah, they did, because they scored twice. But it wasn't anything of their own doing. It was more gifted by the Raiders. So it's almost like giving a false impression there, I think.
Yeah, it did feel like last year, didn't it? The first 5 minutes where came out the blocks on defense, shut down. So yeah, I guess I hear your point. I think it's just a good phase defensively as well. Go on, Lee.
I disagree slightly on the notion that it's Vegas gifting you 7 points. Part of that was good play on the Dolphins defense. It was good play by the Miami Dolphins team. Like, they contributed as much to that as Derek Carr did throwing it. I would say it was luck if we were notoriously bad, but if you've got a turnover streak as long as the Dolphins, some point it's just no longer an accident. So, but I know what you mean. It's definitely, it feels like two chunks that were good, and it, you know, when you condense it down into two things happening back to back like that, it's going to feel that way. But I do think the Dolphins deserve some credit for getting a takeaway. It's a takeaway rather than a giveaway.
Yeah, it's just slightly. I mean, we can't, like you're saying, it wasn't a bad first 5 minutes. Everyone kind of sat up, and then we allowed Carr to get into rhythm. I do like Derek Carr. I think he's a very underrated quarterback. But beside the by, we gave him, you know, their play calling is more ambitious. They've got weapons which complement each other. Like, we've got those weapons as well, but we just, like, they obviously, they've got, it's a bit more of a rhythm of using them. I thought we actually played Darren Waller very well. I mean, 54 yards is still a decent day for Darren Waller, but not anywhere near like that first game they played this year. Waller got 19 targets. For Eric Rowe or Xavier Howard played him incredibly well there. So we were able to clamp down and stuff, but there was always that one Raiders wide receiver open. Brian Edwards got open a lot in the last few minutes. Henry Ruggs came down with a couple of catches. Just their offense is not that much better than ours, but it just looked like far more efficient at some points in this game. And I think that's where the fundamental difference was on the day. Go on, Si.
Yeah, sorry. I just want to circle back to what Lee was saying around it was good play by the Dolphins to generate those scores. Yeah, it was. I'm not obviously disagreeing with that. What was the point I was trying to make was that the scenarios that they managed to get the ball in were quite rare. So the 85 yards pick six was their longest since Brent Grimes got 94 yard return in 2013. So it's a very rare circumstance that they found themselves in. And again, similarly, the Raiders, normally a team wouldn't necessarily go for it on fourth down in their own territory, unless it was perhaps towards the end of the game, certainly not in the first quarter. So yeah, I do understand the point Lee was trying to make around it was good play by the Dolphins, because it was. They still got to get the ball in the end zone. It was finding themselves in a very couple of rare situations that led to that.
Yeah, I think, sorry, I wasn't trying to sound like I was arguing arguing with you. It's more that I think when we all look at things, when we're looking at it in a negative way, it's a Raiders giveaway. Mm. And if this was a win, it's a great Dolphins takeaway. Do you know what I mean? I just think it's a bit of both. Do you know what I mean? Derek Carr definitely wants that throwback and he's capable of doing better. But also, it's a good call, well executed by the Dolphins as well. So it's...
And I'm so glad you said Derek Carr and not David.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're trying to strain the positives out of this. That's what you're doing, isn't it, Lee? You're looking for the silver linings.
Yeah, I'm going to strain positives out of this because I think there's... I said the same thing last week. I think there's plenty of people can pick up on the negatives, and I think a lot of them are plainly obvious. Definitely one of my takeaways was Jacoby Brissett played like a backup quarterback. Guess what? He's a backup quarterback. Being paid like a backup quarterback to be the backup quarterback. Like, the problem is everyone has convinced themselves that because what we saw on the field, at least with the Buffalo game, was bad, that what's sitting on the bench must be better. That's not necessarily true. It's just not what was on the field. Let's be honest. The O-line changes weren't massive. They weren't massive, but the performance was much different because the Bills game snowballed into an absolute horror show. There's no defending them, but at the same time, I don't truly believe that an NFL offensive line is actually that bad. And I think Jesse Davis played well. I think it probably helps having some veteran savvy next to Austin Jackson, who wasn't as bad as he was the week. Like this week, he didn't look like a lost cause. I think that's massive. I think if Tua's in this game, he hits a lot of the quicker read stuff better than Jacoby Brissett, and we see better production from the offense. Does it lead to points? I don't know, because the receivers are still not getting open, so it's still a lot of short completions, and potentially that's a lot of slow drives that don't necessarily lead to points. But I think it's easy for us to scramble after a loss and say, oh, we need the guy who's sitting on the bench. But then we assume that the coaches have not only got it wrong in putting those guys in, but they've also got it completely wrong in talent evaluation. And that basically, if that's the case, they shouldn't be coaching the team at all.
Yeah, I'm not going to go down the tour route again tonight. I think it's been done to death, hasn't it? And we'll cross that bridge when we know a bit more about injury and stuff like that. I think for me that, like, everyone's kind of going, oh, you can't get anything beyond this offensive line, and it's definitely the case. It's not good, no. But the work, like I said at the start, I felt it was better this week. I felt you got, I think they finally kind of reshuffled the pack into a way where if they continue to all play in these same positions across the course of the season, by the end of the year, we could have a line which is feasible. I mean, I don't know what you think to that one, mate.
I do think, I said it last week, I do think it's very purposeful putting Eichenberg at right tackle. It's because, we said it at the beginning of the season, the most important thing this season is finding out Tua as a guy. And he might not be. But the only way to do it is to give him enough time to prove he's not the guy. You know, if he stands back there, there was a bunch of times Jacoby Brissett standing back there and there is no one to throw it to. And then he's having to scramble. Then he's having to try and move in the pocket while someone tries to come free. You know, we've got to get better across the board for sure. But, it would be very difficult to just dismiss either of the quarterbacks based on what we've seen so far, because there is just far more problems than just the quarterback. And, it's all right to say Justin Herbert is playing well. Justin Herbert's playing in a team that is functioning way better. He has time, even against the Chiefs, against a good team. He had time to survey the field. Well, our quarterbacks haven't got that. They're almost playing the lotto because the few times they do, no one's open. So you've got to get that perfect play where someone actually gets open and the quarterback has time. You know, that's just not working. But something has to change for sure. I mean, everyone knew when Jacoby Brissett was going to try and sneak the ball. Well, it doesn't matter how big and how strong you are. Like, if we all know it's coming, I expect an NFL caliber defense especially one that looks like it's playing extremely well right now, to be able to stop that. And I think that's where they overthought that, you know, the throw in the end zone for a safety, which is a ridiculous play. But I mean, I would definitely follow it up by saying it's a terrible play call, followed up by terrible, the fact that you actually decided to try and execute it is just as egregious as actually calling the damn play in the first place. Yeah. We saw in week one, we know that Tua checked out of a run play into a pass play on a big third down to keep a drive going that killed the game. Jacoby needs to, like, incompletion is fine. Basically anything but catching the ball in your own end zone is basically fine.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I don't really know where to take it from there. I was going to...
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
Just lead you down the dead end alley. That's fine.
Very, very definitive. But look, I'm gonna defend Jacoby slightly and just say I don't think it was a terrible performance. Some people kind of coming out and saying, oh, he was like trash and he didn't do anything. I thought in the fourth quarter he stepped up and he put the ball in the end zone himself. He kind of he gave you everything you wanted in terms of the right attitude, and he kept getting back up when he was on his back. And in all fairness to him, there was a couple of times where I thought, God, the line crumbled so quickly onto him, and I was thinking he's just going to get sacked, and there's a sack fumble coming here. And he was like, and he was, his awareness to know exactly where his kind of dump off option was, his running back was, and just to get the ball at the feet of them and get it out of his hands, maintain the field position, that sort of thing. I thought you saw some experience there. I'm not going to say Tua can't do that sort of stuff, and it's not like game winning football, but just sensible football, really. I thought he did well. And on another day, the Dolphins would have won the toss in overtime, gone down the field, and it would have been a reverse scenario. You know, you could have come away with the win. Do we want to see the play like that every week? No. And that kind of brings me to the kind of overall offensive stats we've got this year. I'll just reel through these. Points-wise, Dolphins ranked 30th in the NFL. Yards-wise, 29th. Passing yards, 29th. Rushing, 23rd. First downs, 28th, and yards per play, 31st. It's just a damning indictment of the offense as a whole, no matter who's at quarterback. And it just needs to kind of like reinvigoration. And so where do you think that we can feasibly go now? I mean, you know, we're not in kind of doomsday season over sort of thing, but something needs to change to kind of give us a bit more energy, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, first thing to say is that you've got to give the Raiders some credit for forcing the Dolphins to play that way. I mean, they clearly wanted to play with the Dolphins in front of them rather than chasing behind. And that was the way to do it, was to make sure that all they were going to give were the short dink and dunk passes. So in some respects, you've got to give credit to the Raiders. And clearly, if it's going to work for them, and as it surely did, because it didn't play to the Dolphins' strengths in terms of their wide receiver core, and the speed guys they've got, that other teams are going to try and replicate that as well. And now the Dolphins know that. So they must now think of ways to schematically select plays for each particular game that are going to overcome the opponents. It's traditional game of chess, isn't it? You know what the opponents are going to do, so therefore you adjust and scheme accordingly. And I think that's the route that they should go down. We talked on the pod last week about throwing in some trickery. I think Jason brought it up and I mentioned it as well, and we didn't see any of that. And trickery is an ideal way to keep a defense off guard, because you can't plan for that necessarily. So I think there are plenty of adjustments needed. You don't see many routes or many schemes that are deliberately trying to get the receivers open downfield. It all just seems to be within the yard of scrimmage, but because that's the way the receivers are running. But and it only obviously changed to a certain extent as we got to the end of the game, when things became a lot more open. So you would have thought that they had success there. Why not carry on that up tempo in future games?
Exactly. No, I think you're right on the kind of trickery aspect of it. And I think the thing is, with these two quarterbacks, and about who's behind center, you've got a bit different, something a bit different, haven't you? With Jacoby, you've got a guy who's like very much capable of using his legs and kind of being that sort of, you know, power back sort of role for a snap or two, so you can kind of factor something in there with Tua. You've got the, obviously he's left-handed, you don't get much of that. You've got the other aspects, his pocket awareness, his ability to break tackles and scamper short yardage. We just need to do something of it. You're completely right there. It's just, again, I wasn't seeing a lot of pre-snap motion. It's very kind of stale, really. I've spent the weekend writing about the Clemson offense being very stale without kind of superstars to execute it, and kind of getting beaten by NC State, who are, you know, using a lot more of the more modern offense. And I think that's something the Dolphins are possibly guilty of as well. Just a bit stale, kind of. They've obviously spread the offense out into a college sort of offense with four receivers at times, four very quick receivers, but they're not getting them open. You're right in terms of the scheme, and it's not scheming them open, but they're also, I saw again, Parker created 1.1 yards of separation. All right, Waddle created 4.2, but you know, if he's going to create 4.2 within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, he can create 14.2 over 20, 25 yards. So just pushing downfield a bit. So very frustrating in that aspect. But yeah, Lee, any kind of, you said you wanted to squeeze some positives out. Anything positive you want to take from here?
Yeah, I just want to, I don't think it's really easy to sit on the negative side. I truly believe it only takes one good game for things to suddenly look an awful lot better. I think we saw it last year when we played that Jags game. It's like, oh, this could be a close game. The Jags had won a game and lost a game at that point. We went into that game and all of a sudden they looked like a different class. This is the first game coming up on the schedule, which we'll talk about in a bit, but this is the first game on the schedule that the Dolphins should win. Yep. Right now, if we go back to our preseason predictions, I'll ask you both, did you think we'd beat the Patriots?
I did have us beat the Patriots. Yeah. Also had us beat the Raiders.
Right. So you had us at 2-1. Simon, how did you have us? And did that change once the starting quarterback went down?
I had us at 2-1 as well, same as Andy, winning at New England and at Vegas.
So we're one game behind schedule. That's what we're worried about right now, is one game. Yes, it means they now have to pull a harder game out of their butts at some point later in the season. But I expect them to play better later in the season. Yeah. Like, I would say, did we see the exact same problems from the Dolphins this week that we saw from them last week when the absolute sky was falling?
Wasn't as bad, but we played a lesser team, didn't we? So it wouldn't be as exaggerated.
We did, but you know, if we want to go down the route like we've done already, where we say we want to take little bits of games, you kept the Bills pretty much under control until you broke the back of the whole team midway through the third quarter. That was the breaking point of that game. Actually, when you watch it quarter by quarter, the Dolphins actually had a good game plan for once against Josh Allen. If you were playing well on offense and keeping the defense off the field, that game doesn't get to what was it, 36-0, 35-0?
35, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You know, and again, just to throw the caveat in there, we said earlier that with Malcolm Brown, his stats aren't good because one of those plays came on a 24-yard run. But when we're looking at the overall offensive stats for the season, then we should throw out the game they didn't score any points in. Because that massively affects the average, doesn't it? So it's do we truly believe they are a 0-point offense? No, because they were in scoring position. They made bad decisions to not kick field goals in that game. They should have had points. Not they should never have won the game. They were awful. But there was, as much as that was terrible decision making on the part of the coaches as it was on the offenses at the offense actually executing. We were in scoring position plenty of times. I just think this is the week. This is the team that we should now go and beat. This is a team that is playing bad, that is also beat up, and we've got them at home.
Yep, I admire the kind of positivity and stuff. I get that. For me, there's a couple of my counter kind of, I don't want to be Mr. Negative. It's absolutely, I completely like, wish I could be a bit more positive. There's a couple of things that just like have been a consistent throughout the first three, which are concerning to me. And that is, the first one is the time of possession. Every game we've been, like at the weekend, we had 7 minutes less possession, Patriots 8 minutes less possession, Bills even more. I just, And I hear you that the one game was completely threw us off, the no points game, but the offense just isn't good. And that's I think what I really want is you, Lee, to kind of tell me how it gets better with the obviously the existing personnel. And I'm not asking you as if tell me or I'll be miserable forever, but I just want to throw out a couple of ideas. Obviously, size said a bit trickery and stuff in there and that kind of thing. But like, it's just not good enough, is it? And obviously, you know, if we're going to be a playoff team, it looks a long way from that now. But obviously, it did this time last year as well. Where does the improvement come? Just go on, side. I don't know if you want to go, and then they can go wherever.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and we don't know necessarily how it's going to improve. We only have our own ideas. We don't know what the team are thinking, but we know it can improve. Because an interesting stat I saw on Twitter, and I can't remember who it was that put it out there, so apologies for not remembering who, but somebody put that over the last 3 years, for the first three games of each season, which is the time Brian Flores has been coach, with 2-7. So he's only got two wins out of his first three games in each season. So we know he can turn it around, because in his first season, we managed to get 5 wins. Last season, we managed to get 10 wins after a bad start. So we know that they can turn it around. It's just a question of how are they going to turn it around? Bundy.
To start with the last point first, that's what you hired. Because you hired a coach that came from a system where he'd been there for an extreme amount of time that historically start slowly. This is not new. Last year, that's what you expect from a Flores team. But this year, because we pumped up the expectations higher, we expect them to be a different team. They're coaching. They're doing what they've always done. This isn't new. We just expected something different. And I just think it's... I'm not trying to be one of those idiotic optimists. It's just 3 games. One, we got a win in. Like, let's be honest, we're a pass interference call away from probably getting a win on Sunday. Like, and if we do, we're still sitting here saying it's a terrible game, but we're saying, well, that's what good teams do. You manage to get through and win a game. All right. So I just think there's ways when it comes down to how to fix it, just execute better. There's still a lot of plays that are there. Don't cut block on the wheel route. That's a huge play. Let's be honest, right? Gaskin's probably right into the end zone. Like, he's wide open and with a lot of room. It's at least a chunk play. That's poor execution because it's a poor throw. You know, like you say, receivers, you've got to get open. You've got to get open. You've got to help out the quarterback. And from the quarterback's point of view, if you're Jacoby Brissett compared to Tua, give them a chance. Because when you did, they did make plays. But before, it was almost like you wanted someone to be 2 yards open. Like, Parker doesn't get open. History tells us he doesn't get open. But he also tells us if you throw it at him, he's going to catch it a lot. So do it. Yep. Same as Mike Gesicki. Catches it in traffic. It's not always going to be big, wide open spaces, you know? I think that some of it is you've got to at least give him a chance and let it rip. Yeah, it could be terrible, but let's be honest. A loss is a loss, whether it's by 35 or by one, really makes no difference. It just adds up as one in the loss column. So I think at some point, you just got to throw it. Just try and execute. Because when they were forced to, they started making plays. They were able to move the ball.
Just need to see a bit more, a bit earlier in the game, don't we? But yeah, that is a very... good luck at that. I know what you mean.
I'm just going to say as well, the other thing I thought about Sunday's game is it's exactly the same way they played last year. For all those games that people said were 2-1 because the defense got off to a hot start, that's exactly what that game is. Except he managed to get enough drives together to keep them in front. That's all it was. Just Sunday, they weren't able to do it. But, you know, that's kind of what this team is. It's the way they coached it last year. Not sure why we expect it to be different this year.
I guess the answer to that one is that they've added a lot more offensive talent, really, and it's not showing through yet, but it will do, Lee. There we go. I'll be positive.
I think coaches are creatures of habit. I think if your habit is to call a game conservatively in front, it's going to be to call it conservatively. Because you'd rather lose trying not to win rather than putting the ball out there. Like, if Jacoby Brissett goes out there up 14-0 and throws a pick six, we're like, well, hang on, why are we not running the ball? You can't be putting the ball out there in dangerous situations, but off the back of a loss, it's, well, you've got to keep pushing. So it's, I think it's really easy to sit here and just ignore the fact that it's exactly the way they played last year.
Well, sorry, you were
ready. Yeah, you say coaches are creatures of habit. Well, don't forget, this is what, the third different offensive coordinator as in brackets in 3 years. So are all the same coordinators having the same creatures of habit?
Yeah, because the creature of habit is firing them and bringing in, like, he's bringing in guys. He's the one selecting them, which means he's probably selecting similar kinds of guys.
This is it, isn't it? There's got to be, I mean, I don't want to get into is Flores on the hot seat or any rubbish like that, but the offensive hiring thing here is that I'm not sold, and I understand it's early in the season. I'm just not sold it as a whole. Like, I'm not sold on Tua after the first game and a bit. I've definitely not sold on Brissett, but as a backup quarterback, so I won't go too hard. I'm just not sold that this team is getting the ball moving in the way it can with the weapons available to it. I don't want to go down the Chargers route. I'm going to do it anyway. The Chargers obviously got a different set of personnel than we have, but they're executing with a second-year quarterback at a very high level. The Bengals are doing it as well. It just isn't working for the Finns. I just want to see something more from this offense. That's my main concern here. You don't have to play like lights out football. I'd very much like us to play lights out football, but it's just a bit crap. is the problem. And we don't move the ball well until there's a panic to do it. Imagine, like, we're 14 up, we get the ball back, we make it 21. It's just, there's no stress, but we just kind of three and out, fumble, three and out. You're just like, we're just not getting the ball downfield, and it's just, and that just allows them back in. That's the problem for me.
But those two chunks of when they had to do it proves that they can, right? So we're saying it is definitely correctable. We're not a terrible team.
No, I agree. That's what I'm saying.
It's frustrating.
Yeah. So because
if we were bad,
offensive mind, yeah.
Exactly. If we were bad, it's fine. I mean, I'd love to get into some of the other rookie quarterbacks right now because, oh my God,
some
of the comments have been absolutely brilliant. I've got to mention, I saw someone say the other day that you've got to pull Zach Wilson out of the game before you destroy his career because it's going so badly. I was like, yeah, but if you do that, you get told that he can't play because he's been taken out of the game. So you can't, if you're going to ride with it, you've got to ride with him. Like, there's going to be dip.
Fun, quick Zach Wilson story, right? There's a guy in one of my fantasy leagues who picked Zach Wilson, and he's been winning every game. And we realised today that the commissioner hadn't got any negative points on for fumbles and interceptions. So this guy has been absolutely killing it. And now he's going to get absolutely screwed. So anyway, there you go. one or two other quick points then. We've got into me having a rant and Lee correcting me. Will Fuller. First game. Si, thoughts on Will Fuller, how he performed?
Had he made that catch right at the death, we'd have said he had a tremendous first game. Obviously, it wasn't meant to be because he didn't make it because of the defender on his back. Just looking at his stats now, he only had 6 targets, 3 catches for 20 yards. Longest of 10 yards, so relatively quiet in the whole scheme of things, but then so was everybody else. So they've just got to find ways to get him involved more.
Nice little grab for the 2-point conversion as well, wasn't it? Which has got into the flat nicely.
I did think at times he looked like a guy who hasn't played since the very first week of training camp. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, he's not done a lot. There's more to it than him just missing the first week, obviously, with suspension and then missing last week for personal reasons. I he's not necessarily been healthy for quite a long time. So I think it was probably as good as you could expect. You don't want to blame everything on officiating. there was two horrible pass interference calls. The one against Devontae Parker, I thought was close. I understood why it wasn't given. I thought that was harder to see in real time. I think the Will Fuller one's unforgivable because in live speed on TV from however many thousand miles away we are here, it was obvious. And it's not a bias thing. It was obvious. It should have been, don't get me wrong, Will Fuller can negate the whole thing by catching the ball as well. But it would have been a tough grab. But, you know.
Exactly. And a year ago, or however long ago that last December night was, we had exactly the same call against Byron Jones, didn't we? And he actually played the ball rather than...
Exactly. So, I tell you what, the Raiders don't want to see Mac Hollins coming back into town anytime soon, do they?
I enjoyed my gif on that tweet, actually. Yeah, he loves a good deep shot in Vegas. One very other quick point to single out a specific player. I thought Justin Coleman was a bit of a liability in the slot. I thought Nick Needham, with his five tackles and one pass defence and 38% pass completion rate against him. I think Nick Needham's on that job now, that third cornerback job. Don't know what you guys think of that.
That was absolutely infuriating because he got beat a bunch of times in the first half, got replaced by Nick Needham, who came up playing well, only for one of the first plays on their drive of the second half for Justin Coleman to get beat out of sight again. It's like, so you identified the problem, you clearly fixed the problem, but then just went back to the original. I don't know if that's one of those things where you just kind of automatically send the starting lineup back out there, but that was, you know, that's a bad coaching mistake.
Yeah, fingers crossed. It's Needham's going forward now. I could even see Coleman falling behind like Igbinoghene if he manages to bounce himself up a couple of spots in the depth chart.
Sorry, you mentioned Noah Igbinoghene. He didn't play one single defensive snap, which is not unexpected. But if Coleman falls behind him on the depth chart, is he going to play negative snaps?
Well, what he's going to do is be off the team, mate. That's what's going to happen there.
The point there is yet another free agent signing that is not panning out at the moment.
I mean, this is a bigger conversation probably for the bye week rather than anything else, but it's astounding that we won five games followed by 10 games, followed by going into a season where we expect to be good. But I think it's universally accepted that the free agent money has been spent pretty poorly, with the exception of maybe Byron Jones, and that the drafting has been not very good, to be quite honest. Like one of the best players you've drafted was actually undrafted in Nick Needham. That's a concern. Do you know what I mean? I mean, especially with the high round picks, those are the ones that are concerned. You know, who's top three rounds?
Yeah.
There's a lot of questions need to be asked.
Kevin Holland looking good, though. That's my favourite draft pick so far.
One thing I've got to say, because I give him crap last week on here, is Jalen Phillips played far better and deserves a lot of credit for it, because he was impactful in the game, which is all I asked for, is just show us that you've got, show us what they saw in you being a first round pick. But they did ask him to cover a lot less. They used him kind of, everyone knows this is one of my pet hates, is using players that you draft out of college to do things they didn't do in college. I don't understand why you suddenly think they can do things they can't do. You know, they've never shown that they can do it before, so we'll draft them and play them somewhere else. Baffling to me. But played into his strengths, looked far better. Looks like there's there's potential there, which is great.
Yeah. I thought the pass rush as a whole was very good this week, actually. Quite often you saw Carr kind of having to accelerate his reads or make something happen. I thought Ogba is the best player on that defensive line in terms of statistical production, like getting to the quarterback behind the line, stuff like that. I obviously think Sealer is very effective, as are a couple of the other guys, Wilkins, etc. But Ogba is the playmaker on that defensive line, and it's promising that he's still doing it despite the kind of rotation of guys that have been brought in the free agency market alongside him.
They do feel like they were awfully close on a lot of plays, and that they are not far away from having that Buffalo Bills type game where all of a sudden it just looks chaotic for the other team. You know, I thought there was a lot of plays where you were like, they're just about going to get there, not quite. You know, I know you don't get paid for not quite, but it just feels like, I mean, maybe this is the game when you play a banged up team with a guy who I consider to be a terrible quarterback. So maybe this is the week to start putting those numbers up.
That is it. That's what we've got to hope, because Indy have been fairly naff so far, haven't they? But cool. All right, game balls. Si, who have you got getting the game ball this week?
Yeah. Purely for his interception return to Landon Roberts. I don't think we've ever given him a game ball, probably because he was injured a lot last season. But it was a great, great pick and great run for 85 yards. Eighth longest in team history, I believe. So he gets my game ball.
And he hits like a wrecking ball as well, doesn't he? Isn't he fun to watch? I mean, I know it usually ends with him leaving the game, but hell, he rocks people.
Was it you that said that the other day? Was it somewhere? I read that somewhere else. It basically said, like, absolute machine and just like, what a player compared to, you know, old school footballer. But yeah, very nice. Vinnie Jones, basically, of the Miami Dolphins linebacking corps. Lee, who's your game ball going to?
I thought Landon Roberts was a good pick. I'll be honest, I thought the corners played really well. I thought Byron Jones, who I've given balls to in the past, was exceptional. I thought Xavier Howard played well. I know he gave up the one pass on like a triple move, but with enough time, I think receivers should get open. That's kind of accepted. But I want to give one to Jalen Phillips, because I thought he showed such a large step forwards from what we've seen in the first 2 weeks, that, you know, there was something there to be excited about.
I'm going to go Brandon Jones. That was a draft pick that's panning out okay as a bit part player, wasn't it? At least six tackles, two sacks for a loss of 22 yards, and three quarterback hits. Very good performance from Brandon Jones.
You can see the kind of guys they like. There's a guy who arrives like a steam train.
I also wonder whether he's more of a situational player as well. I'm not sold on him as a sort of floating free safety, but could be the guy. Yeah, right. On to Indy then. Obviously a big game. 0-3 Colts coming in from a loss to a Titans team that aren't setting the world on fire either. 25-16 defeat to the Titans at the weekend. Derrick Henry really doing his thing without AJ Brown. Guys, what do we reckon? Si, come to you first. A very winnable game, this one.
One they have to win, I think. And the Colts are in just a bit of a mess also on their offensive line too. I was reading up today. Carson Wentz has got a couple of dodgy ankles, so he's not going to be that mobile. So he's reliant upon his offensive line to protect him. And then against the Titans, they allowed 22 pressures, and every single offensive lineman who started gave up a quarterback hit. So their offensive line seems to be in a bit of a mess. And given what you just said earlier, Andy, around the defensive line and Ogba in particular being a particular strength of this team, that is where you attack that Colts offense. I don't think they've got anything to shout about receiver-wise. So if they're going to do any damage, it's going to be with Jonathan Taylor and get that running game. But certainly the offensive line is the weak link of that offense, I think, and that's got to be an area that they've got to look to attack.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. I am a bit worried about Taylor. I thought there was a couple of chunk, but I mean, Peyton Barber's putting up 111 yards, then Jonathan Taylor certainly could. So I think they need to kind of stack the box maybe, and obviously Taylor's reputation would have them doing that. Michael Pittman's a very good receiver, just having a good season, actually. Seems to have started generating that connection with Wentz. I wonder if that's one that we're going to be seeing X cover quite a lot as well. So, Lee, your kind of keys to the game?
Yeah, I think this is must win. I think I will be in panic mode if there's not a performance this week. If there's a section of circumstances, like there's ways to lose games and play good. Like we've seen it before, you can play exceptional and get beat. That's not. But if they're to go out and play bad again this week, then I'll be concerned, because this is the first game on the schedule. I believe this shouldn't be a close game, even with a backup quarterback. I I know I'm one of the few people, and people may very much disagree. I think Carson Wentz is a terrible quarterback. I think Carson Wentz has always been a bad quarterback, because the one season he looked like being MVP is the outlier, not the norm. That is the outlier. And, you know, before that, he was very average in Philadelphia. After that, he was average and only declined. I don't think he's a great quarterback. I think this is one of those games where we need to see Brian Flores call a game plan similar to what he did with Jared Goff. This is a quarterback that you can confuse into making mistakes. You can force him to lose the game for the Colts. I think we've got enough corner talent to shut these guys down and really make this game very difficult. And I feel comfortable with our guys going one-on-one so you can stack the box. I feel absolutely comfortable doing that.
No tight ends at all. Is it a threat? They've got a Waller or anything like that. It's Jack Doyle.
Pittman's definitely a good receiver and is definitely improving. But, you know, Byron Jones just managed to do a hell of a job on a Darren Waller for most of the game. Xavier Howard does a great job against everyone, to be quite honest. So, pick your poison, pick whichever one you want to put on him, do that, and let everyone else take care of the rest.
I think the one weapon that the Colts have got, which is criminally underrated, is Nyheim Hines. That's the only sort of the kind of big play potential there. It can break the back of your defense, can't it? And I want to see the Dolphins recognizing that when he's on the field, that they've got a man, somebody athletic shadowing him out the backfield, because if he gets the ball in space, that's dangerous. One side.
You mentioned about Nyheim Hines, of course, talking to running backs, came out in the news today that they're looking to trade Marlon Mack. And given the fact that the Colts are the opponent on Sunday, do you think there's any value in trading for Marlon Mack, so that he could perhaps not only contribute to the team, but also give some insight into the Colts, as the Patriots did with Malcolm Perry, for example?
I can see Lee shaking his head, but I'd fire a seventh round pick if that's what they're at. If they want more than that, then no. But I wouldn't say no to him on our roster. Go on, Lee, tell us why we're wrong.
How did it work out for the Patriots with Malcolm Perry? And when they signed Isaiah Ford last year for that second game of the season, If you want him on the team, great, do it. If you want to do it to try and beat the Colts Sunday, then I think you're over. I think at that stage, you start to overthink it, because you think you know something. If you think the Colts are giving Marlon Mack the game plan and then sending him over, you're crazy. I mean, he didn't play last week because they're thinking of trading him. There's no way. They're not. Here's a game plan, Marlon. Off you go. To be fair, it might be the greatest play in history. Give them the playbook and send him over, and then just basically do the complete opposite. You know, if anyone's ever watched Blackadder, that is a Melchior style thing to do. That'd be absolutely brilliant. But yeah, I think it's kind of overrated a little bit, signing someone to try and get intel on the other team. I know the Patriots do it every year. I just don't know how effective it really is. Like, let's be honest, the Patriots have been doing it to us every year for the last decade, and they've always beat us at home and lost to us in Miami. So, they were better than us, and they beat us when they were good. So,
yeah, I do like Marlon Mack as a player, though. He's coming out
in that case, South Florida. Good.
Yeah, I think the Bucs are supposed to be interested as well as a South Florida alumni, but they need help, because Ronald Jones is having a horrible year. So, but yeah, that would be an interesting move. Any kind of final thoughts before we do score predictions on the Colts then, Si?
Yeah, I think I haven't really mentioned about what the Dolphins can look to do on the offensive side of the ball as a key to the game. But again, it's another opportunity to scheme according to the opposition, because again, I don't think the Colts have got anything to write home about in their secondary. So I think it's a massive opportunity. If there is going to be a week that they are going to have to play well, this is the you pick this game to do it, because let's face it, and another reason why it's massively important to get the win is they've got the Bucs the week after, and the way the two teams are playing at the moment, you wouldn't standard say the Dolphins are going to win that game. So heading into London, it's going to be the difference between 1-4 and 2-3. And there's a big difference at that stage of the season with those two records.
Yeah, I think, as you say, secondary's potentially a bit vulnerable. And I just want to get into Rocky Sin, who's there, obviously one of their cornerbacks. I think he's an abysmal player that was well overdrafted as well. So Will Fuller often and always plays down that sideline against him. That'd be ideal. Lee, any final thoughts before we score predict?
Yeah, just play the way you did to start and finish, right? It's game on offense. Just
look, do it.
Like, worst case scenario is you get beat. You beat last week anyway. So that would be my rationale behind it. I mean, I'm certainly doing it in the first quarter. Like, I've got to at least threaten to do it to make the Colts believe that I might do it at some point later on. You know, if everyone thinks we're going to play everything within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, it's going to be a tough year because we could all call defenses to block that. So, but I think there is light at the end of the tunnel, and I think that it's not. If we win, great. Then people say, "Well, you're not going to beat the Bucks." Well, no one had us beating the Bucks at the beginning of the season anyway. So, I'm not really sure how that's changed because we're bad. Like, doesn't really concern me. The important one is win this game. Win in London is a absolute must win as well, regardless of who plays at quarterback. Like, the Jags team is bad. The Jags team has a rookie quarterback who is turning the ball over at a high rate. Like, you've got opportunities to right this ship fairly quickly from here on out. So, yeah. Time to get it done.
Agreed. One final question, actually, as I feel like we haven't mentioned his name at all. Si, how long has Austin Jackson got left before he gets yanked out of that starting offensive line?
I think Lee mentioned earlier that he played a little bit better this game, and he certainly had that one push that freed up Malcolm Brown for his touchdown, but he's skating on thin ice, I think. I don't see a massive improvement on from the last game, but who else have they got at that left tackle spot at the moment? So it might just simply be a case of hoping the coaching takes effect and he starts to improve. So, but he's skating on thin ice at the moment.
Yeah, I think he gave up a pretty critical play at the end, didn't he? And obviously, Jacoby completed to Gesicki for 20 yards with that 10-yard penalty. But a bad time. So yeah, I wonder how long he's got. I don't know whether he's got the full season because, like you say, there's no one better, or if he's destined for left guard and Jesse Davis goes to left tackle, and then slowly Jackson's phased out of the line as we choose other options. So
if they don't want Jackson, if you think the Jackson's going to be phased out, go shopping now, because the changes you made at the weekend made a significant difference from the week before and showed that there is a capable line in there. Like, it wasn't great, but it was certainly a good step in the right direction from where we were week two. I'd say it probably performed a bit better than week one. Like, it looked more solid. I think the veteran presence next to Jackson helps, but that probably means he doesn't know what he's doing, which is probably why he performed better with Eric Flowers next to him last year and has performed better with Jesse Davis next to him this year. But I think if that's the case, move on. Go and buy the replacement to fix it. You're going to overpay, and we're going to be mad because whoever it is not going to play as well as we expect for what we pay for him. But fix the line, because we cannot assess the rest of this team until you do that. And unfortunately, we also look like a team that is good enough to win. If this season is a disaster and this team is as bad as we think it, as it's looked at times in the last 2 weeks, we're still a team that's going to win 4, 5, 6 games. And we're not going to be there for the top quarterback prospect. So you're not going to be able to evaluate him, and you're not going to be able to get the top one in the draft. So do everything.
Depends if San Francisco are any good, doesn't it? Which is the problem.
You've got to do absolutely everything you can to find out what you've got, even if what you've got is bad, even if you don't like the answer, then but at least you know. because I think Ryan, you know, I go on it too often, but Ryan Tannehill is such a cautionary tale of, you know, you never built an offensive line to protect him. Guess what? He got more talent on the offensive line. He's more than serviceable. More than serviceable. I'd love to have seen him play with Brian Flores. I said that at the beginning. Like, I think, but again, we've still not fixed the O-line since then, so he's probably still playing the same way. Exactly. That would be my fear with moving on from someone without knowing. Just do whatever it takes to fix it.
Yeah, I would like to see him at left guard. I think he could be interesting there if all else fails.
So we've got San Francisco's pick next year in the first round, right? San Francisco look like they're going to be a good enough team. That's not going to be a high pick, right? A low pick, whichever way you want to. Yeah. We're not going to be at the top of the first round. We're going to be at the back end of the first round. Give it up. Send it to someone for a right tackle. For a left tackle. But it's a first round pick, but it's not a top 10 pick. It's not a top 15 pick. It's probably a higher than 15 in the first round pick. Send it to someone and buy the talent in.
Yep, exactly that. Send it to the Texans for Laramie Tunsil.
Hey, if you want to buy Laramie Tunsil back, I would 100% do it. I got no problem with it. If you got to pay them what they gave you.
Yeah,
I don't actually care if you give them exactly what they gave us and you give it back to them, because we've since then drafted the pieces we wanted and signed the pieces we wanted in free agency. We're in a very different position than when we took that off them. Now we've got to see if it's working. So
there we go. The reverse. I forgot. The reverse Bill O'Brien. imagine the outrage. Anyway, score predictions. Let's go around the houses. I will go first for change. I think we are going to win. I think it's going to be 21-17. Simon?
I think we're going to win as well. It's must win. I think they will win. And I'm going 24-10.
Ooh. Nice low score like that. Lee's going to be like 57-3.
Lee's going bigger than that. Lee's going 28. I was going to go 10, but let's just be different. I'll say 28-13.
I think all scores.
I think you can break the back of this team. I think you can break their will, especially in the sun, especially at Hard Rock. I think teams hate it. I think the Bills weren't enjoying it, even though they were winning.
Yeah,
it wasn't fun.
And Carson Wentz is not Josh Allen, so that is a good way to finish. Right, guys, another fun week. I just hope we've got some excitement and positivity to discuss next week, and then maybe I'll be slightly more optimistic about the world. But then we're coming round to London, and that is exciting. So, Si, is there anything to kind of fill in for people about what's happening in London at the moment, or do you want to do it next week?
We'll hopefully have more details to confirm shortly. But as it stands right now, the Dolphins are going to be at Hard Rock. We're going to be at Hard Rock. We're hopefully going to do a show at Hard Rock. So if you do come along, please come say hello. And we'd love to chat with you. But yeah, more details will be confirmed shortly.
Nice one. There we go. Good way to end. Speak to you all next week.